Hi, I'm Fabi Fab.
And this is Babelito.
And we are
Latinos Who Lunch,
the podcast where we talk about important things like
las verduras pa'l caldo de res.
Hello, hello, hello.
Que show, que show, que show. I'm so excited.
Wow.
You like the transition?
Really good. ¿No que no puedes cantar?
Girl.
You are singing on high, huh?
A veces regreso. Oh my God, I'm so excited.
Why?
¿Por qué? Because we've been waiting for this moment. For like, what? 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 months?
I don't know, girl. But every week we're like, this next week is a listener letters episode. And we never do it.
Pero aquí está. Aquí
I
estamos.
Know. As promised.
Listos.
Yes. Okay, well, let's talk about what we ate for lunch today, Babelito.
For lunch, we had tacos dorados, así como de la calle, de papa.
I really like them.
I know you did.
They're good.
When I went to go get it, I was very mindful of your faux veganism. So I went ahead and bought you some vegan stuff.
I don't appreciate you minimizing. It's not faux veganism. I'm just choosing a plant-based diet when I can.
Okay.
But I'm not going to be rude and turn down food like today.
Because you're not a privileged fuck. That's why.
Yeah, because I got to eat. Mm-hmm. And if somebody's buying me free food, I don't want to be rude and be like, oh, I'm sorry. Well, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if it's up to me, I don't eat meat.
Okay, so.
Or dairy.
I was showing respect and I got you tacos de
yeah,
papa.
Yeah, con un pinche de crema, güey. Like,
yo, are you mad? I'm like the like big fat Greek wedding scene, which the lady's like, con crema. And I'm like, that's vegan. Yeah, con crema, por favor.
Estúpida, mi
like,
pelo.
Se me resbala. And I had a mulita, but it was thick. It was like a big ass gordita filled with carne asada and cilantro and cebolla. It was all right. It was all right. But, you know, I'm not a fan of thick masa.
Masa. Masa. Masa que masa plada.
La manda, la manda, la manda la nana. I'm not like sopes. I will eat half of one.
I just don't like a lot of masa.
Doesn't do anything for me. I'll take tortillas like anytime.
Damn, around. Bitch. Well, you don't even want to fuck with Guatemalan tortillas then,
because they're super thick.
They're like you know, like the thickness of a pupusa. Just imagine that.
That's
just
why I'm not
bread.
Into pupusas either. I mean, I eat them, but I'm not. Anyway, so
not
that's
even
what
the,
we had. The tacos dorados were delicious. And yeah, that's it.
Well, yeah, thank you for bringing those tacos, friend.
You're welcome.
Yeah, oh my gosh. So we're actually recording this right before it goes out. So the Oscars just happened. For all you Vegas listeners, NPR here in Las Vegas, here in Nevada, Nevada Public Radio, is allowing us to, I shouldn't say it like that. They have the privilege of having us.
Exactly.
Thank
bitch.
You. On their airwaves. So we're doing a segment at least once a month with NPR. And we talked about the Oscars. And I asked them if we could share that clip. So I think in a future episode, you can hear what we're going to. We talked about The Shape of Water.
I was going to say, girl, we watched The Shape of Water.
And
we were not reshaped. We were not reshaped.
We watched The Shape of Water. We talked about Get Out. We talked about Coco. So hopefully you'll be hearing that soon. If not, we're definitely going to share the link on Twitter and we'll share the link on our website so you guys can hear us talk with white people on NPR. It's really fun.
Schooling.
They're really great.
Yeah, no, it was. Yeah. It's great to have this opportunity.
They're like, what's a microaggression?
Beach. What's colorism?
Oh, that was good.
Oh my god. I know. We've done so much in the past couple of weeks, but some of those episodes are gonna slowly start coming out because Latinos Who Lunch is on fire this semester.
I know.
There's so much going on.
And because of global warming, it's dry.
Exactly.
And we're just gonna run around on fire for a while.
We're going to Tucson, to the University of Arizona soon. So everybody in Tucson, come and join us. March 14,
16. I don't know, girl. You booked this gig. Get your life together.
And
we'll put it up on our Instagram. They made a nice poster.
Yes. Oh, that was nice.
Yeah.
We're also on a merch on April 6, 7, 8. I mean, there's just so many things going on. But all of that, we're going to share with you guys. So just stay tuned for awesome shit.
Girl.
Yeah.
Have you heard all this RuPaul drama lately?
Oh, my God. Explain it to me.
Oh, my gosh. So RuPaul, of course, again, because she forgets that she's a black gay man sometimes. She says some transphobic shit on her Twitter, and I just want to read it. This is referring to trans performers on the show, like trans drag queens. Mm-hmm. You can take performance-enhancing drugs and still be an athlete, just not in the Olympics, right?
So,
I know.
Bitch.
So RuPaul's referring to the Olympics of drag, which is known as Drag Race.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that, a lot of drag queens were like, yo, that's super transphobic, because she did a interview with The Guardian where she talks about, where they ask her, well, like, what about Peppermint? You know, she was trans.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, but Peppermint didn't have her breast implants yet. So it's like, what? Doesn't mean she's not a trans woman.
Like, gender identity is just based on biology and like, oh, fuck. Like, he should know better, man.
This is what happens when you hang out with Rose McGowan. This is what happens when you hang out with problematic,
terrible,
with Carson Kressley.
Terrible.
Like, this is what happens when you hang out with problematic ass white people and they don't check you on shit.
Mm-mm.
Like
milk.
Oh, don't even get me started, bitch. So I'm glad that RuPaul got checked, because she immediately apologized. She said, each morning I pray to set aside everything I think I know so I may have an open mind and a new experience. I understand and regret the hurt that I've caused. The trans community are heroes of our shared LGBTQ movement. You are my teachers. So, you know, much like this listener letter episode, that people are going to call us out for dumb shit that we're
about to say.
You know what? At least RuPaul apologized. She RuPaulogized. So,
yeah, RuPaulogized.
I mean, she didn't say I'm sorry, but
she did
at least acknowledge that she said something stupid.
I think the problem is that this is not the first time that she has hinted of her dislike of the community within the trans community being part of this drag queen community, right? And I think that's what made everybody so upset, that it's just like, again. So I get people's reaction. And I think it's important that we're calling out our icons. We always talk about this. Like, we always have to be critical of our own community. Don't be afraid, people. Like, we all fuck up, all of us. So with that in mind, let's start.
Oh my God, I'm reading responses.
Put your phone away. We gotta start with our listeners.
You guys go to Willem's page. It's so good. Oh my God. Charisma, uniqueness, no titties. That's
Lord. So bad.
Oh my God. Okay. Our first listener letter comes from Danny. What drove me to email you boys was a segment from episode Listener Letters 3, where a young Latina named Leah has become disillusioned with the racism that exists in Hollywood and is toying with the idea of grad school. I, myself, am a Latino TV writer who rose through the ranks of the misogynistic, sexist, homophobic, and yes, racist entertainment business. I immediately sympathize with Leah's complaints and fears, having had the dreaded, what if I just go to grad school thought 1,000 times over. But in her case, I have to respectfully disagree with the advice given to her. The industry is all about connections and visibility, and while grad school would be an opportunity for her to grow as a storyteller, I believe she will lose the footing she's achieved so far. The only way to make moves in Hollywood is to build your network while finding or developing your voice. And I fear if Leah runs off to grad school, she will lose the opportunity, the connections, and will delay the possibility of working her way into the system. Danny.
Damn.
Do you agree with Danny?
I don't know the industry, so he knows what he's talking about. However, if we don't prepare our people more to really make an impact out there, to to engage with what they do critically, which is hopefully what they teach you in grad school, we're going to keep repeating the same patterns. And that's one of the things we're going to talk about visibility. It's not just about us being there. Like, we got to make an impact in a smart way. So just saying, oh, we're visible now doesn't mean anything.
I agree with that. But also, take me, for example. I don't have a master's degree. Everybody thinks I have a master's degree because I'm at a certain level in my art career.
Correct.
And I don't correct people when they think I have a master's degree. I've been able to make money moves, like our friend Cardi B says. Do I think I need a degree? Sure, maybe someday. Mm-hmm. But right now, I'm just going to keep going until, like, the steam runs out.
You need to learn. Yeah, you need to learn, as we say always, need to be strategic. And you know your industry. So I agree with Danny just because I don't know the industry. But I also wish that all of our people representing us out there had the critical approach to issues of visibility and inclusion that we need. Otherwise, we're going to keep going really slow and we're going to keep repeating the same patterns. But again, if it's about making those connections, and if you have to make that decision, then that's it. But coming from a background of school that is taking me 10 years, and now in my 30s, finally, like, putting that voice in the podcast, that time was worth it for me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but
maybe if we would have started 10 years ago, yeah, maybe we would be, like, gigantic now or whatever. But I don't know. Like, I went for that route and it took a long time, and it's going to take a even longer time to make even a more valuable approach to academia. But that's just the way the cookie crumbles. But that's my industry, right?
Yeah. So you're part of that.
Yeah.
So of course you're an academic. So you're going to tell people to keep going to school to validate your experience.
No,
right? I mean,
I don't need people to go to school to validate my experience, I do think that we as a community, especially because of the, and we talked about this, how there's all these podcasts where we just complain, and very few engage critically on our problems and historically. So we need more people like that. And if somebody has a foot in the door that are ready, that has connections with everybody in Hollywood, and on top of that, it was like a badass, smart-ass kid, like, how even better would that be? But I understand that life is not that easy, and you have to take choices.
Yeah, so, and there's a lot of people with 0 degrees out there making a lot of change for good. So
correct, yeah.
As long as you have those connections and you're comfortable with that,
that's awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, I mean, there's room for everybody. There's room for everything. I just wish that the sort of conversations that you're pushed to critically engage in school would happen in more spaces. That way we don't need academia or the university. I mean, decolonize knowledge, right? Which is one of the ideas of one of our letters. But the reality is different and you have to take choices. I mean, I'm dealing with like $200,000 worth of debt because of school. But that was my choice, you know what I'm saying? So, and that shouldn't be a burden on anybody. So I agree and disagree with Danny at the same time.
Cool.
Beautiful.
Thanks, Danny.
Thanks.
You have a letter for us, Babelex?
Do I have a letter for you?
Okay.
So I decided to keep this anonymous because there's like a whirlwind of information that is coming.
Yes, I read this one. I can't wait. Come on.
Oh my God. Here we go. This is never going to end. The casta system is alive. Hi, my name is. I am a 10th generation New Mexican and I am a curandera. I currently live in Phoenix, but I will someday move back to New Mexico, mi tierra. I was a little heartbroken when I heard Babelitos recall a time when he was speaking at a conference and some New Mexicans were asking him questions about the Jewish lineage that many of us New Mexicans have. His response was something to the effect of, quote-unquote, who cares? New Mexicans have a complex history with mixed blood, food, traditions, language, rituals, and stories. I, like most New Mexicans, have Spanish, Irish, German, French, and Pueblo Indian blood running through my veins. I'm not white. I'm not Mexican. I'm not Spanish or Irish. I am New Mexican. And this has been a dilemma. Most do not understand or care to understand the rich cultural background of New Mexico. I hear your podcast be so culturally aware and sensitive. You value POC and minorities, but it felt as if New Mexicans were dismissed and not as valued for their unique culture because of their pride they have for their Spanish roots. I heard in the podcast with La Judy and the one with her daughter how New Mexicans are not Spanish, but they were all Mexicans in denial, which is such bullshit. I do not deny being Mexican because I think Spaniards are superior, but because I really am not Mexican. I have to deny my Spanish root all of the time, so I do not sound as if I am trying to be quote-unquote better than the Mexicans in the room. It is so sad that I have to deny who I am so that I don't offend another POC. Anyway, she keeps going asking a couple of questions. You always talk about being inclusive, but that includes accepting all and not just the ones that meet your qualifications. I could talk forever about this, but I'm going to keep this short. Thank you for what you give to the Latinx Chicano community. It is appreciated. Keep up the excellent work.
Okay, so what's her question? She's just venting about how you're wrong?
Yeah, uh-huh. Like,
what do you think? Is there some problems with her email?
I was shooketh. Oh. And this is one of the reasons. This is one of the reasons why I decided to keep anonymous, because I anonymously also share her email with some friends from New Mexico because I wanted to get their opinions on the matter.
Oh, bitch.
One of them includes Madalena, and she was very offended by this.
Madalena email. From episode De Brujas and Green Chili.
Correct.
Episode 21, I think.
Correct. And because this is not the first time that somebody has accused Madalena of hating on New Mexicans. This is the problem, people. Us being critical in our podcast about our community, because you don't hear that in other podcasts. I don't think, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong.
There's a few.
I mean, I still have to listen to them. Like, critical, we are very critical about everything that we produce just because we want to produce fucking brown excellence out there, right? We want to produce awesome Latinx content. And I feel like the people that listen to us can do that. So when somebody like Madalena is critical about New Mexican history, somebody like Judy, who talks about her own experience, talking about how they had to deny their Mexicanidad because that was a way of survival in New Mexico, of course they're gonna take too hard some of these comments. She says she's 10th generation New Mexican, but New Mexico only existed 100 years ago.
Maybe she's talking about like the region where her family's from. I mean, maybe it was there before. It was New Mexico? It was what before that?
Well, the problem is that we invest ourselves in this imagined communities because our part of our identities, as much as we don't like it, they're imagined communities. The idea of the nation is an imagined community. As real as it is today, because the borders separate and damage a lot of us, they're imagined communities.
Damn,
right?
Google Maps, you fucking it up.
Yes, you are. And the thing is that what kind of investment do you have adding so much to this imagined identity? Like, why are you asserting this identity so much? And who are you trying to differentiate yourself from? I think that's the real question that I'm posting back to this listener. New Mexican identity is very complex, but it's also rooted in a really fucked up casta system that fucked everybody but the Spanish, right?
Yeah.
And when I said, who cares, I went into this whole entire thing of how asserting your Jewishness was just another reason for a lot of New Mexicans, not everybody, because nobody here is generalizing, of denying your Mexicanidad. And that's not something that I'm making up. And this is why the reasons why I just got mad, because what I saw in the audience when I went to this conference was an ocean of white people trying to assert their whiteness through their Jewishness. And that sounds wrong of me, but that's exactly what was happening. Why? Because in the history of that state, asserting Jewishness, asserting Irishness, asserting Spanishness is another way to deny Mexicanidad. And I know that maybe this is not your case that from the listener letter, but that's the reality of the history of New Mexico. New Mexico is a very complex place, but it's also a very fucked up place. But it's also a fucking beautiful place, right? And I think we need to engage with all of those three areas of our history. The same thing with the states, the same thing with our Latinoamericanidad, like everything, every kind of identity in a way was constructed by somebody, either through history or through laws or through science. And don't get me started with the science because it gets super problematic.
I don't believe in that.
Science is a cult, people. Yeah, science is a cult.
The earth is flat. So you're not going to read what your friends responded?
No, I'm part of those questions about who are you trying to differentiate yourself. That comes from some of my friends. And I don't have time to read the entire letter of Madalena, but she wanted to just assert that she loves being a Mexicana. She loves being Mexicana. She understands her history so well. I've learned so much about New Mexico through her, including the complex Jewish history, because Judaism is real in Mexico. In New Mexico, people were running from the center of New Spain, which was in Mexico, where the Inquisition was. Mm. And this is why in the north, we have all this Jewish blood. I know I haven't done the blood quantum, but I know I have Jewish blood in me as well. It's not about denying or asserting. It's just that it's so complex. If you keep denying one or you keep saying that I am not Mexican or I'm not that, you run into all these problems and you just end up asserting the same casta systems and it's not doing anything, man. That's why categories, that's why the Enlightenment fucked us up. Oh, don't get me started.
You know what category? You know what category I identify with?
Cheesecake.
Stupid. No, I mean, first of all, Madalena, she's incredible. She's based in Denver now. So when I was there the last time, I got to hang out with her, and she is making movements out there. It's really awesome, and Denver's really lucky to have her because she is an amazing asset to the arts out there. She's done so much. And she's just so smart and incredible. So shout out to you, Maddie. And then something that I mentioned while I was out in Denver, actually, about identity, because somebody's like, well, this is a show about pachucos and none of you guys are pachucos, you know, because of course that's an old thing, but you're celebrating the culture. What do I identify as? And I always say when I'm on a panel and I'm like, I identify as whatever I feel comfortable identifying as at the time, because before I would reject the identity of being Mexican American because I said, no, I'm actually half Guatemalan. Mm-hmm. So I identify as Guatemalan / Mexican American. Mm-hmm. And I knew that the reason I was saying that is because there is a hierarchy in the Southwest of the United States because Mexican is the default Latino.
Aztlan.
So I was always repping Guatemala. I still am repping Guatemala, but I equally love my Mexican side too.
Because you share realities and struggles of the Mexican American community.
And so I'm curated into shows with Chicanos, and I'm not a Chicano, but I'm part of Chicano art shows.
And experience.
And the Chicano community has embraced me in a lot of aspects. So to say, oh, I'm not Chicano, I don't want to be like I'm above it or below it. I just embrace that identity, right? So even recently, I usually reject the term Hispanic, but recently I've just been okay with it. Like, I'm not going to call myself that, but why do I get so angry about that word?
Because this is why I'm going to say this, because it's exactly her point.
Yeah.
Because by for example, by her getting mad that people are upset that she asserts her Spanish before her Mexicanidad, if that's what's the case.
Yeah.
Or if she feels out of place because she's I'm Spanish, so what, right? It's almost like accusing somebody of reverse racism. It's like you don't understand the struggles of Mexicanos, brown people, indigenous people in your community. They had to assert, after everything they go through and they still assert their Mexicanidad, you don't know the struggles they went through. So this is why somebody gets mad from a Mexican background when somebody says, oh, I'm Spanish before I'm Mexican, right? Or when they just simply assert that part of themselves. Of course they're going to get mad. Of course I get mad, because it's almost like that person being so defensive about their Spanishness, it almost feels like it's an attack on ours. And I mean, maybe that's not her intention, but it's just, that's what it feels like. You know what I'm saying?
I think maybe because she's so proud of that heritage. I mean, I remember I didn't like identifying as Chicano because I didn't want to be disrespectful, because I understood like the Chicano movement and everything that happened, and I wasn't part of that. Or my family wasn't part of that. So like, why would I align myself with that? But then like, after having people like my tia Jessica on the show, like, well, those were the people that I was around. So I was part of that culture.
Not only that, you reap the benefits from their struggles
exactly.
and their fights.
So why not back them up? Mm-hmm. That's when I changed my tune. Correct. You know what I mean? So...
And that's the thing. It's hard. It's very complicated. And it's hard to answer this email because... I still don't understand what she's identifying as. And at the end of the day, I guess for some people, it might not even matter.
Maybe she was just upset at how you rejected that idea.
But what my experience on that specific moment in time and how the audience felt.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean, and because I'm being critical about it, doesn't mean that I'm anti-Semitic. That's not at all. Like, I write scholarship on the fucked up history of the Inquisition, right? I feel like this was, because one of the comments in the email, which I didn't read, it's about how we're also racist with each other. Yes, we are, but...
Me and you?
Yes. Not necessarily, she didn't say directly to us, but it was a hint. And if I'm going to be accused of that, I need to see receipts. I mean, recibos, fuck!
Facturas.
And I'm getting upset. But the thing is that...
Well, we are racist.
The thing is, maybe I don't express myself correctly, but I'm always critical. I'm always critical. And I've seen the struggles of people from south of the border in New Mexico. And it's been very painful. The border has crossed people of color in New Mexico back and forth several times. And that's something that, of course, when you find somebody that is aware of that and they are upset when you are only assuring your Hispanidad or your Spanishness, of course it's going to be painful. And of course you're going to feel bad in a room full of Mexicans, right? So I don't know what to tell you. I still do not understand how you identify with. And
send us a follow-up email.
And I'm glad that we're starting this conversation because maybe I need to express myself better.
Yeah.
But I was coming from a very historical context when I made those comments.
True.
Right?
True.
And at the end, anybody that denies the Mexicanidad, they're just not good in my book.
All right. Thank you, Leah.
Bye.
Food for thought.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Okay, I'm reading the next one, and it's anonymous. Ooh, this is a good one.
We just got started, man, and I'm already upset.
So you're still coughing? I just want everybody to note.
No, don't accuse me in front of everybody.
I'm not accusing. Mm-mm. I'm not accusing.
Cuando me muera, a ver si te sientes mal, cabrón.
I just want everybody to note that this is the fifth episode where I've told Babelito to go to the doctor. And since this is a listener letter episode, this is because I love you and I care for you, friend. If there is a doctor that listens, because Babelito's not listening to me, if there is a doctor that listens to this episode, please email Babelito and tell him to get it checked, his cough checked out. Thank you.
Como vino tu voz y me dijo que el amor es tú.
All right, anonymous, here we go. Hello, hello, hello. I like this person already. Okay. First, I would like to thank you, Favi and Babelito, for existing and for being my imaginary friends and keeping me company through some long college nights. I am a Dominican, and I was born in the Bronx, New York. Oh. Lin-Manuel Miranda holds a special place in my heart. I firmly believe he is our generation's Andrew Lloyd Webber, and he is Latino. Out there making jobs for people of color. Iconic. Hamilton is an amazing musical, though admittedly problematic in some ways. However, Lynn first came into my life when I was about 12 years old and I watched the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. I saw the cast of In the Heights burst onto the screen, loud as hell, playing merengue and waving Dominican and Puerto Rican flags, dancing like my tios and tias and abuelas. I screamed. I ran down the stairs and yelled at my dad, "They're playing merengue on the TV." And he said, "No, they're not." He didn't believe me. Oof, I just got goosebumps. And I put together that not only were they playing merengue, but the musical took place in Washington Heights, the Bronx, where my grandma lived and my family frequented. And not only that, but the main character was an immigrant from the Dominican Republic whose parents brought him to the U.S. when he was little and who longed to go back to his island, just like me. People refer to Hamilton as the first rap musical, breaking genres and stereotypes about musicals. But that's not true. In the Heights was the very first musical, but it got critiqued because it was too colorful and unrealistic because its characters were happy. They want to see us in things like West Side Story, in gangs and fighting. But Lynn said in an interview that he didn't understand that. Gangs were not part of his childhood, nor were they part of mine or so many other Latinos. Art, music, and dancing on the street was our childhood and reality. Snaps to that. As far as Hamilton goes, you can say that it was created for white people. I would disagree. Yeah. Hamilton was Lynn wanting to create an institutional musical that would be accepted into musical theater canon, the type that would be performed 100 years from now at your old high school. He was obsessed with the Phantom of the Opera for this reason, but the Phantom of the Opera didn't have anyone who looked like him written into the script. He needs to make something that white people will accept. Sure, they're the ones in power. Who else is supposed to create a canon musical? ? So he makes the most American patriotic show ever, but then he also does this. He writes in the specific race/appearance of each character in their description. Why? Now, when your racist white theater teacher is casting for Hamilton, Hamilton has to be brown. Lafayette has to be black. And when he's gone and Broadway directors have to hire performers, those performers have to be people of color. And those people of color have to get paid. And they get paid bank.
Oh, damn.
Anyway, I understand if you still maintain your opinion, but I thought I would offer you an alternative and an introduction and introduce you to the gem of a human that is Lin-Manuel Miranda. Love, your devoted Dominicana. P.S. This is a good, very small writing at the bottom. Really funny. Rich people made Hamilton expensive themselves, just like they do with all other art and they pick and choose. To counter this inaccessibility, Lynn provided high schoolers from New York City in inner city schools free tickets to see the show. Also, every single show, you could buy $10 tickets from a lottery. And before almost every show, the performers perform songs from the show or from pop culture outside on the street for the crowd of people waiting for the lottery. And most of those street shows are on YouTube. Hallelujah. Amen. All right.
Take it away, my friend, because wow. I haven't seen either one of them, so I have no clue. The only thing that I'm afraid of watching this is going to be an empathy fest. And it's just hard for me to engage with that. But I'm not going to say anything because I haven't seen it. And I know you recently. Oh, and also, Erica Abad from UNLV writes specifically about this. She's a PhD who's teaching in UNLV.
What does she write
about? We're going to have her on the podcast because she loves Lin Miranda. And I feel like she's going to school us on that. But in the meantime.
Well, I feel like I went back to school after reading that. So, to our Dominicana best buddy, I agree with you. I agree that maybe I said things that weren't sensitive enough, or maybe I was in a mood the day that I discussed Lin-Manuel Miranda, but it was because I hadn't seen In the Heights, a number one. I was just talking about like the whole buzz around Hamilton and how annoying I find it that all these like white people are like, you know, it's like now it's like the movie Get Out, right? It's like I would have voted for Obama a third term, right? Like, I'm not racist, right? Or now it's like, I went and saw Black Panther opening weekend twice. You know, I was like, okay, we get it. You're not racist. And then, so it's like the same thing. Like, I went to go see Hamilton six times. I'm like, thanks, Rosie O'Donnell. You're still a racist white lady. You know what I mean? So
I'm going to play devil's advocate.
Okay. White devil's advocate. No. That's why I was mad about Hamilton. But then I will admit, I saw In the Heights, a local production here in Las Vegas, and it was beautiful. And it made me cry because I'd never seen that many POCs on stage at once. And it was very beautiful because it was specific to Las Vegas, because they couldn't, there's not a lot of Puerto Ricans here. There's not a lot of Dominicanos here. But what there is in Las Vegas, there's a lot of Hawaiian people, a lot of Filipinos, yeah. A lot of Mexicans, a lot of different kinds of brown people. And those people were in that show playing Dominicans and Puerto Ricans.
That's fucking beautiful.
And it was incredible because a lot of times, for example, Filipinos here in Las Vegas are marginalized and not thought of as a really influential community.
Always.
But they are. And yes. So are the Hawaiians.
They're shaping the city.
Yes. They call Las Vegas the Ninth Island. So when I saw that sorry, New Mexico. So so I think that after I saw that, I completely changed my mind mm-hmm. about Lin-Manuel Miranda. What I do get upset at, well, okay. So I understand maybe Hamilton is not that bad. And once it's off of it's Broadway, whatever, and high schools are doing it and people can afford to see it, then I'll be happy to see it. I'm not interested in it, but I'm happy for what it's doing and it's giving so many jobs to people. What's happening now, though, in Hollywood is Lin-Manuel Miranda has become the token Latino for everything.
And that's something you cannot deny.
And that's something you can't deny. Correct. So, like, Moana came out and they're like, oh shit, we need a brown person to do the music.
Lin Miranda.
Right. Which, thinking back, it's like Elton John did the soundtrack for The Lion King. Sting did the soundtrack for The Emperor's New Groove. So at least Moana is about brown people and like a kind of brown person. But I mean, it's still not good enough.
No, not even, because it's just like you cannot put everybody in the same category.
But what happened? There's no Polynesian musicians. There's no, you know what I mean, or whoever's represented in that movie. I fell asleep watching it. I gotta try to rewatch. I was really tired.
It's such a good movie.
I know it's good. It's really good. I just couldn't.
So that and Zootopia. Oh, those.
I know. I tried watching Zootopia on the plane, but it was
when I get sad, I watch Zootopia.
It was too. It was. I don't know.
Anyway.
Oh. Okay.
But I'm gonna ask this question.
So I agree with everything mm-hmm. that our friend, our Dominicana, what did she say? Our devoted Dominicana said.
I'm still going to watch it very precariously, because when I hear something wanted to become the canon, that's my first flag. And second flag, it's like when so many white people are loving it so much and making it so problematic. What is it about it?
Well, you remember when Hamilton came out, the soundtrack came out on Spotify, and I was freaking out. I was like, this is fucking cool.
Yeah, I remember.
I was really excited, and then all of my white Mormon friends were like, whoa, this is the best thing ever.
And I'm not saying that, again.
And I'm like, oh.
I'm not saying that we shouldn't all engage with,
yeah.
with POC-produced content. Of course we all do. Yeah. And we should, and we should support, no matter what background you have. But as you said, like when they are the ones, they are making it the canon, maybe there's something wrong. And maybe that's what we need to discuss.
Yeah.
I don't know. Again, I haven't seen it. So hopefully we can have Erika. Erika, you're invited. Come on, girl. Like, you should come to the podcast and school us on this. But if the problem is the canon, I mean, if one of the reasons is the canon and the people that are making it the canon are the people that are mainly consuming it, which is rich white people, then we do have a problem, and that's where we need to start talking about.
I mean, I talk about it with my art all the time. It's like sometimes I make art that's about art, which is art about white art. So it's like it's referencing something that already exists in the canon so mm-hmm. that it's accepted into the canon. Like when I did the giant nachos that are touring the UK right now, right? people love that because they knew that I was referencing Oldenburg just by naming it floor nachos, like his floor cake or floor burger or whatever. So I pulled the same move.
But you question yourself this. You're questioning yourself this.
But I think Lin-Manuel Miranda also knows what he's doing.
Well, show me that interview. Maybe there is.
She just said.
I don't know. Again, I shouldn't say anything because I haven't seen it. But it's just...
In the Heights is a beautiful musical, and if you ever get a chance to see it, see it.
I have to get over the fact that it's a musical first, because you know that I don't like musicals. But well, I will watch it so we can talk about it.
Why not, though? I just really quick.
There's nothing about musicals that... It's not me. It's just... I don't know. Like, I've tried. I remember... Like 15 years ago, I'm like, I gotta be a good gay. So I went to a Cher concert first.
Cher? And you went to go see a Cher? Cher, bitch.
You're making fun of my accent.
I'm not.
In our podcast.
You're from, you always say Chile Chipotle and you can't say Cher?
Because it's spelled with CH.
So is Chipotle.
Anyway.
Cher.
So I went to see her and I was like, okay, this is great. But so I thought I had to do this is why it took me a
talk
while.
Talk about the white
this
cannon,
is why
bitch.
It took me a while to
Shit's
accept
blowing you up.
This is why it took me a while to accept my homosexuality, because I thought I had to do certain things like watch fucking musicals and like share or whatever.
No, you watched Will and Grace.
I tried, girl. Too. I really tried. And I just,
you were young.
There's
man.
Nothing about
you
it.
You were young. Mm-mm. That's okay.
You don't like sad white music, like you say. So
I don't. I'm already sad disagree. Enough. I don't need to listen to sad music all the time.
Well, I'm happy enough. I don't need to be engaging with fucking people dancing and singing at every other fucking scene. No, thank you, man. Mm-mm.
It's a musical.
I don't like it. Just like I hate operas. I don't like operas. I don't. I don't fuck with them.
I think that I liked them so much because I was in musicals when I was in high school.
I was in theater, but not in musicals.
Okay, so that's what I'm saying. And I know like what goes into it. So, and I mean, you know that when I watch stuff, I'm looking at I like to look at the production. Mm-hmm. And I love that part of it. I think that's why I love musicals, because of the sets and the choreography and like people working together. Like to me, that's like magical. Like that's a lot of work. So I love to see that, you know.
I don't need that level of production to be like fucking...
I know, but we're also from stirred. Las Vegas, where there's like limited access to theater here. Mm-hmm. So I think if we lived in a city that had a really cool theater, we might be into it.
There's places like New York that's part of the culture.
Yeah.
And you just grow up with it. But yeah. I don't know. Like, I don't know.
I'm not okay. into them. Oh, thank you. Lin-Manuel Miranda is cool.
And it's going to be a future episode.
I love In the Heights, and we're going to get into it in a future episode. Shout out to you.
So the next email comes from Hayden Wright. Hello. I was lucky enough to attend a live taping of Latinos Who Lunch at MICA. It completely blew me away. The way you stood before an auditorium full of art school freshmen and tore one of their idols, Frida Kahlo, to shreds. And the acute reference to Roland Barthes, when deconstructed indigenismo, the indigenismo disaster made my heart sing. But the moment that made me leap out of my seat was when you drew a parallel between one of the afterlife scenes from Coco and Disney's technicolorful approximation of Teotihuacan. Although this was mostly for selfish reasons, I saw my own research in it. Last summer, I was awarded funding to travel to Teotihuacan in order to produce a suite of field recordings which document the unique vendedora markets of Teotihuacan and the myriad and effective exoticizations of non-denominational indigeneity. It fascinated me to see talismanic objects mass-produced in Aztec and Maya motifs sold by dozens of turistas when the site was one time occupied by Teotihuacana. But for these extreme examples of appropriation, really landed for me was the aural. For the jade Aztec calendars, you had to physically pass by the vendedoras, but their pinquillos and jaguar whistles diffused perfectly through the thin air, no matter where you stood painting this site as being quote-unquote authentic or else genuinely in the thicket. She also talks about, and this is another part of the letter, but she also talks about how she has all these recordings about Teotihuacan. Anyway, best Hayden Wright. Thank you so much for this email. I know exactly what she's talking about, so let me put it into context.
Yeah, I don't know.
So one of the things that she's mentioning is that when you go to Teotihuacan, by the way, Teotihuacan are the pyramids that are 25 miles north, if I'm not mistaken, of Mexico City.
Say Teotihuacan one more time.
Teotihuacan.
Thank you.
The Teotihuacanos were the Teotihuacanos were a culture that thrived some 1,500 years or so. Rob is gonna kill me. Before the Aztecs. So the way that some people look at the Aztecs as their glorious past, the Aztecs look back at the Teotihuacanos as part of the glorious past, right? And when you go there, and just to show you that this idea of exoticizing our own culture is not only from people from Europe or the States, it's from everybody. When you go there, you are sold Mayan artifacts. You are sold all these exotic whistles that resemble sounds of the jungle. It has, in a way, nothing to do with the aura or with the history of Teotihuacan. So it's very interesting that she mentioned this, because we spent a whole entire 2 weeks in my class talking specifically about Teotihuacan. But it's very interesting how in certain parts of Mexico you go and they're selling you this exotic dream, right, about Mexican indigenous past without even know what it is. Decontextualizing Mayan iconography. Sometimes the Aztec calendar is known as the Mayan calendar. I mean, all this misappropriation of information when the Mayans were their own world, the Aztecs were their own world, and the Teotihuacanos themselves were their own world. But again, it's not even about that. It's about just selling an exotic dream. And she captures that through field recordings. And it's amazing.
Cool.
That's it?
Yeah.
No, and one of the things that she's referring to also is when we talk about Coco in the afterlife, there's all these pyramids. That's exactly what we're talking about. That the afterworld of Coco is like this exotic wet dream for Europeans and gringos, right?
You know, I keep going back and forth about that film. And I think we're going to have Irene Mata talk about it with us. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to save it for that episode. But the thing that I found most disrespectful of that movie was the border part. I can't believe there was a border to the afterlife.
That's just the beginning for me.
Oh, but that was the worst. I'm like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
We horrible. Can't even get a break after we die. Like, we have to go to the border. We have to cross a border to die, and like, also, to visit the afterlife.
And then the afterlife is the exotic wet dream of gringos. They constructed in the 30s and 40s.
Yeah.
Just like the trolleys. And it's just so much. And then, again, pirámides por aquí. Like, it's just when you put it all together, and that's what we did for the Micah episode, which we hopefully will do with Irene, we deconstructed all of those elements make it so problematic.
Why weren't there any modern buildings in the afterlife? Like, or why wasn't the afterlife just like for real the afterlife?
Because
like, just
that like doesn't fulfill the magic realist
I know.
Fantasies. De los güeros, man. Los güeros
want to shout out to Guillermo del Toro.
Los gringos that's what the gringos want to see in Mexico. They want to deny our realities in order to go with that fantasy, which is fulfilled through Frida Kahlo, which fulfilled through the Day of the Dead. When the Day of the Dead itself, it's such a beautiful and complex celebration, which you don't even get to see begin to see in that movie.
Mm-hmm. Also, shout out to Santa Fe. All right.
Oh, but wait, I have one more thing.
Okay.
So as part of my class, we had a guest, the new curator from the Fowler Museum. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Susan Newberry, who did the hookup. He actually Skyped and gave us a whole entire lecture about how urbanization took over Teotihuacan. How, for example,
what is this person's name?
This name. Oh, sorry, I was gonna give him the shout out. Matthew Robb, who's the curator, and he curated a show of Teotihuacan that now it's coming to LACMA.
Oh, cool.
And we're going to go see the show with my class, and he's going to give us a tour.
Amazing.
So we've learned so much, and learning about Teotihuacan, you get to learn about the future of Mesoamerica, because there's a lot of amazing things that happen in Teotihuacan that we're still questioning, right? That are reflected in the art and the culture of the Aztecs. So if you are interested in your Aztec lineage, you have to learn about Teotihuacan. You cannot separate one from the other. So again, shout out to Matthew Robb from the Fowler Museum in UCLA for this mind-blowing lecture. And thank you again to Hayden Wright for this. I listened to the recordings. They're amazing. And for bringing this up, because exoticization not only happens from one group to the other, it happens within ourselves, and we do it to ourselves all the time. Anyway, that's all I have to say.
All right, our next letter is from Maria Ferreira. Hello, I am an avid listener of the show. First of all, I would like to thank you both for the important work you are doing in putting the podcast out. I am an undocumented poli-sci PhD student in a predominantly white institution, and I was wondering if Dr. Babelito had any advice about how to survive / make trouble for my school and faculty. Lastly, I'm interested in Dr. Babelito's and Favi Fav's too sort of vision, or what seems like evolving opinion on the visibility idea on the sign-off. Visibility is essential. From what I can gather, it seems like y'all are not behind this idea so much anymore, or perhaps it has been complicated by something? All the best, Maria. See, this is what I'm talking about. I was going to ask you about this recently, and but you're like, save it for the listener letters.
Because somebody asked me already.
So before, so whenever we sign off, we say 5 stars, 5 stars only, because the more reviews we have, the more visible we are, and visibility is
essential.
And that's something that just happened naturally one day, and we just kept saying it.
But it kept bothering me since the beginning.
So why? So why didn't you speak up before then?
Because it's like saying diversity. It's like diversity is essential when the meaning of diversity has been diluted to tokenism. And I feel like that's something similar to visibility. Just because we're all going to put ourselves out there doesn't mean that we're doing a service to our community. So visibility is a tricky thing. Visibility should be taken very seriously, and we should be very responsible about how visible we are out there in the world. So just by saying visibility is essential, it's not. Visibility is a very, very complicated thing. And we always say this, we need to take a hold and we need to be responsible for our own voices. So we finally have this platform, so let's be responsible for those voices and that visibility that we're putting out there. This is why we're doing this episode. This is why we're answering these emails, and this is why we're engaging with these conversations, because we take visibility very important. Otherwise, it's just going to be two gay Mexican Guatemalan
who's
dudes from Vegas just saying bullshit. You know what I'm saying? And
that's not what this is.
And that's not what this is. Shit. That's not what this is. I didn't sign up for this. So when we say it, I was like, visibility is essential. But I'm just like, no. Like, it's not, it's a lot more than that. So I feel like next episode, we're going to sign off with something different, but I still have to come up with it.
We're not going to come up with it right now on the spot?
No.
Oh, no. Come on. Aren't you a theater kid? Can we do improv real quick?
No. Oh, my God. I sucked at improv.
I know, bitch.
I
do a podcast with you. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we're going to
have to. What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I do think that visibility is a trap a lot of times, because just because you're visible doesn't mean you're actually making a difference. You're
exactly
just fulfilling a quota. But in the sense that just in the sense that we're visible on iTunes, so more people will listen to us. That's what I'm thinking about. I'm not thinking about visibility as this grand idea described.
I'm always thinking about the grand idea of things. So sure. I can't separate it.
It is un pendejo, wey. You just said like this, I'm always thinking of the grand idea.
I am.
And you gave a little shoulder shimmy. That was so good. I wish I recorded that. I wish I had that as a boomerang. Oh, that was good.
So that's why. But thank you, because we've been wanting to talk about this for 20 episodes.
I love how we're saying a slogan we don't believe in for 20 episodes, though.
No, I haven't said essential.
That's a problem.
In a lot of episodes.
Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah. So, it started with a t-shirt. Somebody posted a t-shirt that said visibility is a trap. And I'm like, oh my God, it is a fucking trap. And they just started going in my head.
I think it was Queer Chicano Chisme that did. Or
I think it was
Lambeculo.
Lambeculo.
Yeah. Shout out to Lambeculo.
Hey, girl. I don't think he listened.
Yeah, he doesn't listen to this. He's too busy making nopal cactus suits. Okay, let's see. Here we go. All right. You're next.
This is by Daniela Nunes. And she says, bueno, from Los Angeles. As a student artist in Proud Chicanx, I always ponder over this one question that provokes and inspires me. What draws the line between what's Chicano art and what is cultural appropriation? Recently, one of my Chicano student professors asked this question to the class in a huge debate amongst Latinx spark racial controversy. I love listening to you guys, and I would like to hear your opinion. Con mucho amor, Daniela Nunes. What do you think? Let's read it again. What draws the line between what's Chicano art and what is cultural appropriation?
I don't get that question.
I do, because...
What is it?
Because Chicanos are sometimes accused, especially by Mexicans, of cultural appropriation of their culture.
Oh, I get it.
And sometimes they get accused of culturally appropriating Aztec culture, for example, without the context.
I don't do that. I mean, I appropriate nachos because that's like what I know. Lowriders, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I kind of agree with that. But I don't know. There's just like so many symbols around Chicanidad. Is that a word?
Yeah.
That are just like part of it now. That's just like swap meet symbolism, you know, kind of thing?
Yeah. But I also think that we are not exempt from it just because I remember one time... I saw this lecture from this scholar, and she said, oh, no, we're exempt with some of this because we're brown. Like, no, girl. Like, that's not how it works. So we can easily do the same thing as others do to us. And
yeah.
Sometimes that's a defense mechanism from a lot of groups. And that's not right. And I think we do...
You know what, maybe?
We're faulty. We're fault at appropriating certain things.
This is giving me... this just sparked something that I've been wanting to talk about on the show for a while.
Go for it.
It's like, we go to all these events. I've been to events all over the U.S. in Austin, in New York,
in L.A.,
like these vendor events. And every time I go, it's the same fucking thing over and over again.
Yeah.
It's like Frida Kahlo stuff, Loteria stuff, Papel Picado stuff, Concha stuff. And that's it. You know what I mean? And it's like, okay, cool. You have the word chingon in an old English font. Thank you very much. Like, it's the same shit over and over and over again. Is that all our culture is? Let's dig a little deeper, everybody. Like,
yeah.
If you want to set yourself apart, don't make Frida earrings. Everybody sells those. like, look, there's so many great things that are out there. You know what I mean?
Shout out to El Tocayo, who's working on something, brewing something. But it started from exactly that. That question is like, we just went through 20 tables and everybody has a Frida item. You're right. Is that all we are? When we are a rich, incredibly complex culture with thousands of years of history. This is why I use the term, which I've been accused of not using it, but I still use it, faux woke. Because
accused of being faux woke?
No. I've been accused of being like an elitist for using that term, faux woke. But the thing is, and Yosimar talked about it. Because just because you read one Gloria Anzaldúa book doesn't mean that you fucking get all the problems in the world. Like, that's the beginning, man. Like, let's keep digging because there's so much out there. I absolutely agree. And that's why when we only scratch the surface, when we only understand the superficial aspects of some of these ideas, we run into the problem of what Daniel is talking about, of cultural appropriation. Yes, it's important to understand that this is Aztlan, that this is the land of the Aztecs. But it's also important to understand that the Aztecs were imperialist and they were horrible to all the communities around Lake Texcoco. It doesn't mean that we have to dismiss one or the other. It means that we have to critically engage with our history. And we don't do that at all. We don't. And we have to do it.
Yeah. And also for everybody
that's... ¿Qué pendejada vas a decir,
I know. Wey. No, I'm just saying, like, also everybody that's listening to us and, like, listening to me make a statement like that and be like, bitch, you make piñata art. You make art with piñatas. Like, who the fuck are you to talk? I know, girl.
But this is why I love the murals, because the murals are expanding onto that idea, because they're not, it's not a dead end. Like you created your own technique, and you're making murals. So you're now making reference to a lot of things, including 19th century painting, which none of this faux woke Chicanx Latinx kids even understand. Why? Because for many reasons, because struggles, because you're choosing a path of resistance, and I completely understand, and I throw no shade to anybody, but that's it. There's so much more, right? And let's do it, man. Like, mm-hmm. let's put our culture out there beyond Frida Kahlo. Fuck that.
Yeah, this is red paper. I make murals move.
Hey!
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Thank you so much, Daniela. Con mucho, mucho amor. All right. So, we're running out of time, but we get so many emails of people just sending us love. So, we just want to give a few shout outs from some people that sent us some letters. So, Babelito.
First, I'm going to shout out Vanessa Osuna, who loved the recommendation about Alex Ferreira. And she was complaining about, why are you giving me shit for recommending Alex Ferreira twice? He is so good. So, thank you, Vanessa, for defending me. You're right. Alex Ferreira, mira, lo escucho, lo veo, lo siento. Caigo en un abismo de pasión.
You done?
Yes, I'm done.
Okay. Next one is for Rosaura Lezama. We had dinner with her, actually, right? This is the person we had dinner with?
Yeah, New Year's Eve in LA.
Yes. Oh my gosh, she is amazing. She had all these ideas for Latinos Who Lunch shows, and we said, well, girl, why don't you be a guest producer? She produced like 3 or 4 episodes. She sent us the topics and the ideas. So you're going to hear those, or a couple of those at least, in the future. So thank you so much to Rosaura.
We love you, girl. And also, shout out to Lisbeth Alvarez. She sent an email recommending the art of her cousin, Chisco Mojica. And Chisco spells C-H-I-S-K-O, Mojica. The music of Andanowski, which is the son of Alejandro Jodorowsky.
Ooh.
And Hello Seahorse, which some of the members are from Juarez. So, of course, I have to give you a shout out because you know good music and you know good art. Good art. Again, Lisbeth Alvarez, shout out.
And last but not least,
I have more after that.
Oh, so go ahead.
Yes. No, you go first.
Oh, me?
Uh-huh.
I want to give a shout out to Andreas. This shout out is for you because we love that you listen to us. Your boyfriend is awesome. He told us about you and how much you love the show, and actually met him when I went to Austin, Texas. So next time we go to Austin, let's get together.
Let's all have dinner.
Let's be Latinos Who Lunch in real life, actually.
Yeah.
Hi, Andreas. Shout out to you.
Shout out to Clayla O. Rodriguez, a PhD from Canada, who created a syllabus after the horrible comments of Trump. It's called the Shithole Syllabus. So we're going to upload that into, I'm going to put a link
into
our website.
Cool.
So you can read it. And it's this whole disclaimer about those words and really get into it. And it's amazing, and I'm very happy. We have been going back and forth. Girl, I need a job. I know there's a lot of jobs in Canada. Let me know what's going on. Again, shout out Clayla Rodriguez from PhD. And finally, blanktag.com, who just sent us amazing stickers. Thank you very much. We love you guys.
Yay!
That's it.
Shout out to everybody. We have a lot of shout outs coming in our next episode, because we were at We All Grow Latina Network Summit. It was so cool. We met a lot of our listeners. They were incredible.
We were We were two dudes in an ocean of women, and it was, I was comfortable, man. It was beautiful.
I know, girl. I saw you strutting. Just kidding. That was me. damn, when I put those sunglasses sponsored by Mazda.
Wait,
I
was just... you said you were going to give me those.
I did. I put them in your bag.
No, you took them.
Oh, they're cleaning. In my car. Sorry, I was trying to feel the Mazda fantasy today in my 2005 Toyota Tacoma. So that's coming up next, I think. So we did a live segment in the Podcasterio Lounge. So that's going to come to you next week. We'll play part of it and then comment over it. So
it was magical.
That's super exciting.
That recording was magical to me. It was so amazing.
It was really cool. I must admit. Man. It was really fun. And we did a panel with Wait, Hold Up podcast. That panel was so awesome.
And that should be coming out this week or next week as part of Nos Vemos en el Swap Meet. So please stay tuned for Nos Vemos en el Swap Meet because it's a really good episode.
Okay, so just some church announcements. Mm-hmm. Babelito and I will be at the College of Southern Nevada this Friday at 9 a.m., right? Or
yes,
10 a.m.?
9 a.m.
We're going to post about it on Instagram and on Twitter. So if you're listening to this, today it comes out. Tomorrow we'll be at the College of Southern Nevada doing a live Latinos Who Lunch with the art department. So that will be cool.
Awesome.
And then coming up the week after, we're going to be at the University of Arizona in Tucson. So look for that.
In Tucson.
In Tucson. And then after that, remember, emergelv.com. Use the offer code Latinos and you get 10% off of your ticket, right?
Yes.
Or did I just make that up?
No.
We're part of the conference Emerge, which is the first big weekend in April, like the 6th, April 6th through the 8th. Babelito and I are hosting the speaker series, and then we're just going to enjoy the rest of the festival. So come join us. It's going to be super
fun.
Va a
ser un pedonón, güey, un pedonón.
Oh my God, I'm already blacked out just thinking about it.
And then prior to that, we're going to Scum anniversary.
Oh my gosh, you guys. Scum's second year anniversary is March 23rd, 24th, and 25th. It's all ended with at Echoplex with a performance by Limpress and a bunch of other amazing performers and bands. Get your tickets now. Go to Scum LA, Club Scum LA's Instagram. There's a link in the bio.
I'll put the link.
Hashtag Google it, locas.
Yes.
Because I'm going to be there for Richardina is actually from Songmas.
She's going to be there.
Me and him are going to go together. It's going to be amazing.
Ooh. This was awesome. I got mad and I feel like that letter is just started.
The New Mexico one?
Yeah, man, because this is complex shit that I'm trying to say it all fast in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But this could be a whole entire like class that I can put together based on that.
I feel like we should have Madalena on and your friends, some of your friends from Albuquerque. Maybe if we go to Albuquerque together someday, mm-hmm. and just like really get into this topic with New Mexicans. Maybe even invite the listener.
This is why I love and hate about New Mexico.
Yeah.
I feel like I was in a different country. I love that, but it also felt strange at times. So it's the land of enchantment.
Oh my God, the state seal. Do you know what the state seal is?
It's the Zuni.
No, girl.
Oh, the seal.
The seal is a bald eagle hugging, like protecting the Mexican eagle. Okay.
See what I'm saying?
Hi. You want to know something?
Ow.
So thank you so much also to, I really enjoyed the passion that our Dominicana listener had for Lin-Manuel Miranda. It really made me think of it differently. And I really felt the emotion in her email. So thank you for that really moving email. It was, I get it. I get it now. I understand. And, you know, our opinions change all the time. If you go back and listen to the first episodes, girl, I don't know what the fuck I was talking about most of the time. So, you know, and that's what this is about. It's about growing and
showing it.
And showing it. We're growers and showers here at Latinos Who Lunch. We all grow and show together. Hashtag never better. So, I'm just going to keep talking if you don't shut me up. Thank you. Okay. And thanks again to everybody that emails us.
Yes, and please continue to send those emails and send those questions, because we're pretty much reading an email in every episode now. But when we don't have, we have amazing emails where they just give us a shout out. They're like, we love you. Thank you. We love those emails. But if you can add one question over there, then we can continue.
And
we
can do, us questions.
Yeah, send us questions, because we continue. We can do this sort of episodes a little bit more often.
And they don't have to be that deep.
No.
They don't. Actually, the best questions that I get a lot of times are the ones that are simple and just, or fun. Like, it doesn't have to be about identity. It doesn't have to be about racism. It could just be about, like, yo, what's your favorite burrito?
No, keep sending the identity and race ones.
I mean, keep sending them. But you know what I'm saying is, we also like to have fun on this show, and I would love some fun questions. If you guys need any advice.
If you're wondering, well, you know, like, ay, Babelito, ¿por qué estás tan guapo? Like, we can get into that, girl. Like, just go for it.
And as always, you can visit us at latinoswholunch.com. Please go on iTunes and rate us 5 stars.
5 estrellas only.
Because the more reviews we have, the more visible we are. And visibility is?
Rewind 20 minutes and you'll find out.
Also, remember to send your emails to latinoswholunch@gmail.com. Yes. This show was produced by Emmanuel Ortega and Justin Favela. Our intern is Carla Lagunas. Our music is by the band Brownout. I'm Fabi Fab.
And I'm Babelito.
Ciao, ciao, ciao.